Chapter 9. I awoke to a clatter at the other side of the room, and immediately the thoughts of an attack blasted through my brain. Without thinking, I launched myself forward with my right arm outstretched for the staff I'd left at the foot of the bed, but stopped as my forehead nearly collided with Daisy's. The bear girl's honey-colored eyes were wide, and her mouth hung open in the bright sunlight filtering in through the window.
Whoa there,
the bear girl chuckled.
Easy now.
I sat back in the crumpled sheets and took in everything around me. The brunette leaned across the bed with a tray held between both hands, and on top of it rested an enormous breakfast. Just looking down at it made my mouth water, and my stomach growled angrily in protest. On the plate were a large pile of steaming eggs, fried hash browns, a few slivers of bacon, and beside it a cup filled to the brim with strong black coffee. When I raised my eyes to the bear girl, I realized that all of her sisters had surrounded the bed, and they were grinning from ear to ear. "What's all this?" I chuckled.
"Breakfast in bed!"
Valerie squealed.
"You've been working so hard the last few days. We wanted to do something nice for you."
"Thank you," I breathed, shook my head, and then lifted my eyes toward the bear girl once again. "Thank you so much, my loves. I don't think you understand how much I appreciate it."
"As Valerie said,"
Edeny broke in,
"you've been pushing yourself to the brink, and you needed a long rest. That's why we let you sleep for so long."
"So long?" I asked, and grabbed the fork from the tray Daisy offered me. "How long did all of you let me sleep?"
"Well, right now,"
Cecilia uttered, turned, and glanced at the clock on the wall.
"It's 12:30.
12:30? I gasped, threw the blanket off my legs, and moved to get out of bed. But a pair of gentle hands pushed me back to the mattress.
"You didn't sleep well last night,"
the she-wolf smiled, and her eyebrows furrowed.
"Don't even try to deny it, Charles Rayburn. You tossed and turned almost the entire night. We wanted to make sure you were well rested before we headed toward Valestia."
"But..." I started, but then trailed off as I realized that seven pairs of eyes were staring me down. "Fine. I'll eat my breakfast without any more protests."
"Thank you,"
the feline woman giggled.
"Now, eat up. Daisy worked really hard to make it extra delicious today. All of us already ate, but we were doing the daily chores first, and once you've finished eating, we can head out."
Wait,
I exploded through a mouthful of eggs. "You already fed and watered the horses?"
"Mm-hmm, and hitched them to the front of the wagon."
The ash blonde nodded.
"And Cleia summoned some water from the desert. It looked tough, but we were able to put it with our other supplies so we won't run out on the journey there and back. Isn't that exciting?"
"You did that?" I asked the Nyx woman. "You summoned water, even out in the middle of the desert?"
"Well, as Valerie said,"
the turquoise-haired woman chuckled,
"it was pretty deep underground, but I managed to get enough for all of us if we use it sparingly. I'm sure that once we reach Valestia, I can try to do it again, but I had to lie down for a bit after. It was exhausting."
"Daisy, tell me, did anything happen last night? Were there any signs of the creatures that were stalking us?"
"Just a few dunes that looked as if they'd been climbed up and down,"
the bear girl explained.
"The scents weren't strong, and when I reached the most visible footprints, the wind had blown away the sand. I'm sorry, Charles. Maybe if we were back in the forest, I'd be able to track them. But this place is so strange and unfamiliar that I can't quite get a read on them. I can't tell if they're human or beast. Why do you ask?"
"I had a strange dream," I muttered. "But it could have easily been just that, a dream. But when we leave today, I want everyone to be on high alert."
"Of course,"
Cleia nodded.
"We'll sit at all the windows, and if we see anything, we'll shout up to you."
"Very good. I want two of you to sit up front with me on the driver's seat. That way I can concentrate on the road, and the other two can make sure that there's nothing on the horizon. Now, do I have any volunteers?"
"I've sat up front with you the last few days,"
Edeny smiled.
"Why don't you let Cleia or Cecilia?"
"Sure. I feel horrible that I haven't been able to spend quality time with each of you, but our lives are only going to get crazier."
"It's all right,"
Ryan soothed and pressed a hand to her growing belly.
"We'll have plenty of time to sit back and relax once you're king, Charles. We agreed to do this, and when we did that, we knew that things would never be the same."
I glanced around the room and then noticed that my staff wasn't where I had left it the night before. While chewing my mouthful, I glanced toward the bear girl and pointed toward the edge of the bed where the weapon should have been. The brunette seemed to understand immediately and chuckled lightly.
You easily could have hurt yourself if it was left there. I moved it. If something had happened, you would have leapt out of bed and landed squarely on the pointed core.
The horses are hitched and everything is ready to go? I asked, and then shoveled more of the delicious food into my mouth.
Yep!
Valerie cried.
Daisy already put out the fire in the stove, while Cleia and I went around, gave the horses water, and let them finish up the rest of their oats. There weren't any other signs of danger except for what Daisy told us. I'm just so used to living in the mountains that I kept thinking that a mountain lion would just appear out of nowhere and attack us.
Well, there are other dangers that you need to worry about in the desert,
Daisy explained.
Venomous snakes or scorpions or...
Nope, nope, nope!
Valerie sang, covered her ears, and shook her head.
Think happy thoughts! Big piles of pancakes, fuzzy bunnies, smiling babies! Nope, not gonna think about the creepy crawlies that live in the sand.
They generally don't live in the sand,
the bear girl corrected and tapped her chin thoughtfully.
They live in a big outcropping of rocks. They sleep under the rocks. Specifically, the snakes will sunbathe on the rocks during the day and then crawl underneath when the desert gets too cold.
I think that's enough torturing Valerie for now, I chuckled, leaned over the tray, and carefully took the feline woman's hands off her ears. You know how scared she gets?
Yeah!
The ash blonde giggled.
Stop scaring me!
So?
Ryan chuckled.
It's safe to say Valerie's a scaredy cat.
I am not!
Valerie giggled good-naturedly.
I just don't like bugs or snakes or those scorpion things that Daisy mentioned. I'm the one who climbed down into the Drake's den when no one else would.
You did that entirely out of your own volition, I broke in. But yes, that was pretty brave of you. Now that all of that is out of the way, Josephine, have you heard back from the Drake Legion about how things are going back in Granum?
Oh!
The Drake woman grinned.
Yes, they've said that Askara and a great deal of the soldiers backtracked along the road and felled a bunch of trees. The men who were practiced in woodworking are already beginning to strip the trees of their bark and cut them into the pieces you specified with the blueprints. They should be constructed by the time we arrive back in Granum.
Very good. I nodded, sipped at my coffee, and then downed it in a few gulps. Now, there's something very important I need to talk to all of you about. We'll need projectiles to launch at Granum's walls. I doubt we'll have time to craft them when we arrive back, so once we reach Valestia, we'll collect the ore and iron needed, then get to work making the cannonballs and other projectiles. I have a few of the ingredients here in the laboratory, but we'll have to stock up on more. My only hope is that Valestia has items that we can use to make them.
So we'll have to make them ourselves?
Edeny nodded.
Though I don't have much practice in the physical sense, I've been schooled on how they're made and how we can make them. I can help you with anything you need, Charles. Wait.
Ryan broke in, furrowed her eyebrows, and turned to stare at the she-wolf.
You know how to build cannonballs? Roughly. We've been included in a few meetings where they were mentioned when I was a child. And of course, as I grew older, I had a better understanding of them from my own experience.
Wait, wait, wait. I shook my head, threw off the blankets, and stood from the bed. How? How did you learn all of this?
How else would I have learned it?
Edeny asked with a single raised eyebrow.
There were quite a few times that I thought I'd have to go to war against the Queen. So I prepared myself the best way possible with a war council. My mother had to do it a few times too, though hers weren't as serious as mine. I hate to admit it now, but I surely would have lost if it had happened. But I put in the best effort that I could.
I knew that you and the Queen weren't on the best of terms, but to actually call a war council?
It always escalated to a new point.
The Duchess shrugged.
I never knew when we'd finally reach the breaking point and draw arms against each other. So I always had to be prepared. Nothing ever came from it, and I'm glad. She would have slaughtered me and whatever ragtag group of soldiers I managed to throw together. That's why I started collecting men and added them to our numbers when you finally transformed me. I knew that if she were going to announce war against Edenheart and me, I had to be prepared, and there was no way that the constables would defend the city or my honor. I had to do it myself, and I prepared extensively for months.
I'm grateful you did, I chuckled, and began to dress for the day. We receive most of our numbers from your army. We wouldn't even have an army if it weren't for you, Edeny.
I mean, we would. We just wouldn't have as large an army as we do.
We found barely any consorts, workers, and servants in the last city we've taken over, I commented as I slipped into my boots. That begs the question. Why are all the cities sending them to the Queen? What does she need them for? Is she expanding her army?
Well,
Ryan uttered.
We already know that the harlots rose up in the capital and took down a big chunk of the city. Could it be for that?
I think she knows something is coming. She doesn't know exactly what it is, but she senses it. There's animosity brewing all over the country, not just from the harlots, but the men, too. They may not have risen up or taken action, but she can feel it, and she knows it's coming eventually. That's why she's bulking up her armies.
I wouldn't say it's specifically because she senses something,
Edeny interrupted.
She's been this way for a very long time. Every few years, she goes through these phases where the only thing she's concerned about is her armies, and she bulks them up considerably. I do think the harlot's sudden attack brought it on, but it's not something that's unusual for her behavior. I've been around the aristocratic circles for a long time, Charles. It's a difficult and treacherous place to navigate, but if you learn how to do it properly, you can discover a lot of useful information. The things I know about the Queen, well, I've learned them the hard way, and through the experience of dealing with her and her court. Trust me on this, Charles. The Queen is a paranoid person, and each year that passes, she only grows worse.
So, she's sinking into madness?
Valerie asked and pressed her fists to the plush mattress. Silence fell over us for a moment, and I stared into each of my women's faces. When my eyes landed on Cecilia, her lips were pressed into a firm line, and her emerald eyes stared down at the floor. Her cheeks puffed out, and I stepped forward to press a hand to her shoulder. What is it? You can tell us.
What Valerie said,
the redhead balked.
It's the closest comparison I've heard in a long time. I couldn't think of it myself, but there was always something wrong with the Queen. What do you mean?
Edeny asked, turned, and cupped her small chin in her fingers.
I only worked for the Queen for a short time before I was sent to Burscon and Samilla,
the ex-guard admitted.
But Valerie hit the nail on the head. The Queen isn't all right. Edeny said she's paranoid, but I think that's an understatement. She's out of her mind with fear.
What does a woman like her have to fear? I asked. What is she so afraid of?
She's been in control for a very long time,
Edeny stated.
There are a lot of women who die or kill to have her position. She's been in control for hundreds of years. Don't you think that the masses are tired of the same thing that's been happening for the last hundreds of years? I know I was, and I started to make changes in case something did happen. If I'd had the means, I would have secured my place on the throne. But that's not my place anymore. That dream has passed, and I've other visions of the future. It's yours, Charles, and I'll make sure that you're the one who has it. I never worked directly with her,
Cecilia admitted.
But Hortensia did.
Ryan, I probed. Do you have any memories of that time? The imp woman's eyebrows knit, and she stared down at the floor for a long time before raising her gaze to mine. I'd never seen the black-haired beauty look so troubled in my life, and I instantly reached out for her, but she shook her head with a small smile.
No, I'm all right,
Ryan smiled.
I was just reminiscing. At first, it was difficult to remember what my past life was like, but the more I reach for the memories, they come flooding to me, and they're so overwhelming.
I can understand that,
Daisy murmured, cupped her elbows, and stared down at the bedspread.
I don't like to think about the memories I have from Delphine. I try to push them to the back of my mind every time they resurface.
I feel the same way,
Cleia admitted.
I did some pretty horrible things.
We all did,
Edeny stated.
But don't let that weigh us down in the present moment. We're different people now, and let the changes within us be the testament.
Ryan raised her head, and her yellow eyes landed on the Duchess with such kindness. The red-skinned woman reached out for her sister and placed her hand there tenderly with a soft sigh. Then the black-haired beauty nodded once, cleared her throat, and parted her lips to speak.
I didn't remember at first. I think I probably blocked all of those things from my memory. But it's true. The Queen is nearly out of her mind. She knows that it's been hundreds of years since she came into power, and people are tired of her tyrannical rule. Her greed has surpassed any other woman living in the country, and the capital citizens are unhappy. People in smaller towns like to romanticize the capital as if it's the utopia, and looking from the outside, it does seem that way, until you live there and experience it for yourself. They're supposed to have the best medicine and renowned doctors, but if you got to the first ring, there's sickness and death around every street corner. The city is on the verge of a pandemic, but the aristocrats and the queen don't care enough because it's the men who are sick, and it'd be pointless to treat them.
And yet they bring these sick men into their homes, I finished for her. They live with them, sleep with them, and the sickness only spreads.
The death toll in the capital is triple, even quadruple the normal numbers for a city of its size. They're on the cusp of collapse every other week.
Do they even treat the sick men?
Daisy grumbled.
Or do they let them die and then fill the positions with healthy men, as I suspect?
Sometimes they're treated. Especially the consorts or the servants that work closely with the aristocrats. But most of them succumb to their illnesses. The only ones the aristocrats truly care about are the consorts, since those are the ones they regularly breed with. A few servants lost, though? That's just another trip to the market to buy a new one. They come and go so quickly. It's horrifying.
So the only ones who are treated for sickness are the aristocrats themselves?
Valerie grumbled.
And the consorts, who are seen as property instead of people. So I can agree with both Valerie and Cecilia on this subject. The Queen certainly is not all right, and she hasn't been for a very long time. We used to receive the strangest orders when I was part of the guard. She'd make us patrol different parts of the city for absolutely no reason. You've already heard that the Third Ring houses the Queen, her court, and her officials. So it seemed utterly pointless to patrol an area where the people were entirely loyal to the Queen. But that brings forward the question. Were they loyal to the Queen, or did she suspect something of her subjects?
There's something that's been weighing on my mind for the past few days, I admitted, and everyone's attention turned to me.
What is it?
Daisy asked. Granum, why is it so heavily fortified? Edany, you told us that the initial wall was to protect the Duchess from male attacks, but why do they need the wall now? What are they trying to keep out?
Oh, what are they trying to keep in?
Edany whispered ominously. What are they protecting? What are they hiding from everyone inside of that wall?
Maybe,
Valerie thought aloud.
Maybe they're just trying to protect the city? Could that be a possibility?
It could, but that doesn't seem to be the case.
I have to agree,
Edany murmured.
There's nothing valuable in Granum. There are no mines, no oil buried deep within their mountainside. Most supplies have to be shipped in from other cities. So there's nothing inside that would be worth stealing. What could they be hiding?
I'm sure that we'll soon find out, I uttered. But we need to set our sights on Valestia for now and get back on the road. Now, is everyone ready and remember their orders?
Yes, Charles!
The feline woman sang.
Let's get out on the road!
I hastily dressed with a low chuckle, slipped on my boots, and then headed toward the caravan's door. I picked up my staff on the way out, and both Cleia and Cecilia followed diligently. Once we climbed up into the driver's seat, I grabbed the reins and then slammed them against the horse's backs. The sun was high, and it beat down on my back with intense heat. It had been months since I'd felt weather like this, and though I missed the rainy fall back home, it was better than the freezing cold in Granum. I had to squint my eyes as I looked out over the glowing sand reflecting off the harsh sun's rays. Cleia and Cecilia settled in beside me with their faces aimed at either side to look for any signs of danger. I steered our horses back onto the rough path and then slapped the reins down harder. We needed to get to Valestia as soon as possible. While I appreciated my women for allowing me to sleep later than usual, it still meant that we had less time to get to our destination, get our supplies, and then return to Granum. I didn't know how long I could last baking out in the sun, and thought about calling out to my women to retrieve me a wide-brim hat from the back. With so many more miles left on our journey, I decided against it and forced myself to deal with it for the moment.
It's eerily silent out here,
Cleia stated over the rattle of the wagon's wheels.
It's off-putting. I agree,
Cecilia nodded.
I'm so used to the lively forests we left behind. We could always hear the little animals scurrying around or listen to the birds singing in the trees. I haven't seen a bird since we left Granum.
There's not a lot of birds in the desert, I explained. There's a few, but not a lot. The ones you'll see the most are hawks, but those only come around when they smell death on the air.
Well, that's not scary at all.
The Nyx woman chuckled and nudged me with her elbow.
Let's talk about happier topics. Have you thought about names for your child yet? Ryan is getting bigger, and before long, we'll have a baby in tow.
If I'm honest, I snorted and then shook my head. I haven't had the time to think about it. But I'm sure that we'll have to decide soon. Ryan will probably want to name it some sort of obscure imp name.
Hey now!
The red-skinned woman yelled through the open window behind me.
My name is an obscure imp name, and everyone thinks it's pretty. Not only that, but it will strike fear into the hearts of our enemies, just like our child's will.
See? I chuckled lightly. We'll figure it out soon enough, and then we'll let everyone know. But we'll have to come up with two names, since we don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet.
I've always wanted to be a mother.
Cecilia sighed and leaned back in her chair.
As soon as I was old enough to think of those things, I simply couldn't get it out of my mind. And now, with you here, Charles, I can have those things.
All of you will bear my children, I iterated. And we'll be one big happy family in the palace. We just have a few obstacles in the way that we need to overcome first. I hope that all of you will be pregnant by the time we reach the capital.
Really?
Cleia gasped and covered her mouth with both hands.
Oh, that would make me so happy, Charles. Me too.
Cecilia grinned. Oh, it'll take a few tries, I'm sure, I smiled. But you will be. And once I'm king, the palace will be teeming with our beautiful babies. My two women sat happily beside me in silence, and each of them had a faraway smile plastered across their lips. From what I could guess, both of them were lost in their own fantasies of the future and what it would hold for them and our children. We stayed like this for a long time, and I wiped the sweat away from my forehead a few times, but otherwise it was a lowly day. The sky was cornflower blue, with no clouds in the sky. I hadn't seen such a lovely view like this since summertime in Edenheart. I wondered how long it would take for all of them to get pregnant. Ryan was the first, but that likely only meant that one of them hadn't found out or realized it yet. It easily could be any of them, and it was exciting to take guesses while I waited to hear from them. I glanced over my shoulder through the window and watched as Ryan and Daisy all stared out their respective windows. Through the doorway out of the kitchen, I could see into the drawing room, and Edenie stared out of the enormous bay window. Valerie stood with her back to her and looked out onto the other side. Josephine was nowhere in sight, but I assumed that the Drake woman had gone to the rear cabin and looked out of each of the windows. We were covered on all sides, but that still didn't appease the strange anxiety building up inside my lower stomach. Something had been out there last night, watching us from afar, and we hadn't figured out what it was yet. We hadn't seen anything yet while out on the road, but that didn't mean that whatever it was had left its position. The creatures could easily still be watching us at this very moment, waiting for the right time to pounce.
Charles?
Valerie's nervous voice shouted from the drawing room.
There's something coming! To the left of the caravan!
I can see it now, too!
Ryan shouted.
Well, I can't see it. Whatever it is, it kicked up a good amount of dust.
Edenie rushed across the room, pressed her hands to the windowsill, and glared out. Her smooth face hardened, and her lips pulled back to expose her pointed canines in a vicious snarl. Then I heard it, the sound from last night. At first, it sounded like the roaring of the wind in my ears, but as the cloud of dust drew closer, I was able to pick out specific familiar noises. First came the mechanical tilt of valves, and then an explosion of steam, but there was another sound, and it was so familiar.
Are those horses?
Someone asked from behind me, and instantly the dream from last night flooded my memories. Their shiny gray hooves glittered in the bright sunlight and beat against the glowing golden sand. When I lifted my head to get a better look at them, the bright rays blinded me, and I instantly squinted against the sudden and sharp pain. I couldn't make out what they were, but they stood taller than our horses, and their necks sloped down to meet their wide backs. Their hooves beat at the sand, and they reared back with loud neighs. But the sound was different. It was the same one I'd heard earlier, the strange mechanical clink of parts moving in effortless tandem. Then came the screaming release of steam, just like the one my machine made after we finished an experiment. I turned my head at the last second, took my eyes off the road, and looked toward the commotion. I spied the enormous cloud of dust in the air, but that wasn't what caught my attention. Four women rode through the desert, all of them wearing wide-brimmed hats, but that wasn't what caught my attention. Each of the beasts they rode on were made entirely out of shiny silver metal. Each beast's eyes glowed a fiery red, and as they galloped toward us, steam puffed out of their molded nostrils. "By science!" I gasped, and then snapped out of my dazed trance. "Everyone, prepare to fight! We don't know what they want from us!" I snapped my eyes back to the road in front of us, and a guttural sound exploded up my throat. Directly in front of us, another woman and one of the mechanical beasts stood. Her eyes cut through the distance between us, and a wicked grin spread across her stunning face. Without thinking, I pulled back the reins and jerked them to the left to keep from plowing the madwoman down. The caravan's wheels screamed, and the horses instantly lifted their front legs up into the air out of protest. Slowly we skidded to a stop a few feet to the left from the woman, and she tilted her head. It took me a moment to realize that her entire left arm wasn't clothed in a shiny silver cloth, but instead was entirely made out of metal, just like her horse.
"Good afternoon, partner,"
the leader cackled with a heavy twang in her voice, lifted her glittering onyx pistol in her mechanical hand, and aimed it directly between my eyes.
"It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, and I'm so sorry that we have to meet this way, but I'm going to have to ask you to empty your pockets, hand over your supplies, and give us all your valuables. You see, this is a robbery, clean and simple. We wouldn't want you or your little handsome consort losing your heads over a little bit of money, now would we? Go and hand them over, before my finger slips on this here trigger."